Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us on this Medical Monday to discuss ear, nose, and throat issues is Dr. Jason Mouzakis, Chief of the Division of Otolaryngology at Albany Medical Center and Section Chief for Pediatric Otolaryngology. He specializes in pediatric otolaryngology, cochlear implants and hearing loss, airway obstruction, nasal and sinus disease, snoring, and sleep apnea. Dr. Mouzakis is a graduate of Albany Medical College, where he is now assistant professor of surgery and director of the residency program. He also completed his internship and residency in otolaryngology and general surgery there. Dr. Mouzakis, welcome to the Medical Monday.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
The number to call for all of you, and some of you are doing it already. You better get going, everybody. There are only two free phones. Nope, one free phone. Dr. Mouzakis, welcome again. You can post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. My hint to you is that's the way to do it. Email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Okay, gang, a lot of you are on the phones already. Doc, it's so good to see you here. I know that we have some common friends and that some of the great people in your community have been doing great work for such a long time, and we thank you for it.
Well, thank you, Alan, and this is a great opportunity to share our knowledge today.
Let's go to Lois in Woodstock. Okay. Lois has a question that many of us are plagued with. Go ahead, Lois.
This is her husband.
Oh.
Bernie.
Okay. Bernie, welcome.
Yes. I was on a plane about a month ago, and I had a cold. And as we were landing, I had this severe pain in my ears. And it persisted after we landed. And I had a severe loss of hearing in one ear. And the pain persisted. I went to an ENT doctor, and she put me on antibiotics, which didn't seem to help, but I took it for 8 days. And now my hearing is coming back, but it's about a month, and I wonder, will it all come back eventually?
Bernie, that's a great question. So to start, I'd probably want to take a step back and talk a little bit about the anatomy. And I always love sharing with my patients kind of the mechanics of what goes on in our head and our ears. And so the ear is connected to your nose through a tunnel called the Eustachian tube. So if you plug your nose, you can kind of pop your ears, and people will talk about that. In a plane, the pressure changes abruptly when we take off and when we land. And for some people, and it has definite relevance to your story, if you are flying and you're congested or you have a nose or sinus problem, it can really aggravate those pressure changes. In fact, I believe the FAA, who over-regulates our air pilots, will actually ground a pilot if they have sinus and or ear problems for that same reason. So probably what took place, it was kind of the perfect storm. You were going to sustain some pressure changes. You had a nasal congestion, and then that aggravated the pressure change. It will resolve. It may take quite a bit of time. And so one of the things that an ENT doctor, an ear, nose, and throat doctor might propose is to focus more on your nasal symptoms. So if you're still congested, they may recommend decongestants or antihistamines or even, in some cases, nasal sprays to try to open the Eustachian tube up.
Hey, you still there, Bernie?
Yes.
Okay, so you heard, that's the advice. Doc, while we're on the subject, there are many people who have things that they do in order to, when they land.
Right.
Now, my big thing I have found works is a great big yawn, an exaggerated yawn. Really pick your jaws apart.
And Alan, that is perfect anatomy, because the muscles that are responsible for yawning are also the muscles of the soft palate, the roof of the mouth. Yeah. And so what you're doing is basically drawing on those muscles to open the Eustachian tube. So other people might aggravate that or bring that about by either chewing gum or swallowing vigorously. Mm-hmm. Those are other techniques.
Okay, Bernie, thanks for the call. Thank Lois for us, will you?
Yeah. Yes, I will.
Okay. Let's go to Tristan in Greenville. Tristan, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband has 50% hearing loss in his left ear, and he basically just couldn't hear for a while and never did anything about it. And then I urged him to go to the doctor, and he got a hearing aid. Within 5 years, he started losing hearing in the other ear. He went to the ENT, who suspects that he has otosclerosis and has recommended a surgery called a appendectomy. And I'm just wondering what your opinion is of the success rate of a appendectomy, and what about the idea that you could lose taste, so the ability to taste?
Those are excellent questions, Tristan. So again, this is the theme of anatomy, and otosclerosis is an interesting condition. It's a suspected condition when we deal with early onset hearing loss. How old is your husband, roughly?
He's 35.
So it afflicts typically adults past their second and third decade of life. So it's not something that you're afflicted with early on in life, but it's an early onset form of what we call conductive hearing loss. So the hearing bones, and we can talk about it as we learned in elementary school, the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup. The stirrup is also called the stapes, and it's stiffened in the case of otosclerosis. So it's not conducting the sounds. And yes, as a first start, we often recommend hearing aids. And depending on the patient preference, hearing aids are excellent, but can be a little bit cumbersome, and perhaps people don't like the aesthetics of having a device in their ear or worn outside the ear. Ultimately, if you're deemed a candidate, meaning that you have a conductive hearing loss that suggests otosclerosis, the surgery that's proposed, as is in your case of your husband, is something called stapedectomy. So where the stapes, that last little bone, the stirrup bone, is actually physically removed and replaced with a prosthesis. And if all goes well, it's an amazing surgery. In fact, I actually have performed this on mid to late teenagers, so kind of an earlier onset of otosclerosis for some of these kids, called stapes fixation, if you will. So it's not quite the same disease. But the amazing thing, if it goes well, is it's a perfect result. Your hearing is restored to practically normal. So it's a fairly straightforward surgery. And if it's done in the hands of somebody who does quite a bit of these surgeries, that you can be confident. The problem, though, is you're removing that third bone, and often there can be a leak of fluid in and around the what's called the foot plate, or the connection to the inner ear. And if that were to occur, you would have a profound or deafened hearing result. So the danger is, the complication is a permanent hearing loss if it doesn't go well. And so that's often spoken to our patients, to say, hey, if you can't handle a hearing aid, the prospect of surgery is exciting and excellent, but there's that remote chance of a misadventure in the operating room. So
can you put a percentage on that?
I would probably say less than 5%, Alan.
Well, if you're 5%, that's a lot.
In good hands. And so, like anything in surgery, I think you want to find an ear surgeon who really specializes. This is not one of those, I do one stapedectomy a year. You want somebody who regularly does this surgery.
Well, Tristan, there are a lot of people behind you, so did you want to?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, dear. Okay. Let's go to Ray in Great Barrington. Ray in Great Barrington, you're on.
Yes. I'll try to make this fast. I have Behçet syndrome. I wonder if the doctor has ever treated it or knows anyone in the area of Great Barrington.
Could you give us that again, the name of the disease?
It's Behçet's, you said?
I believe it's B-E-H-C-H-E-T-S.
So Ray, that's an autoimmune phenomenon, and do you have a rheumatologist that you work with?
Mm. Can I throw in my other quick questions before we go on?
Sure.
I'm losing my voice. It's affecting, of course, I have the oral things and GI. But the oral has creeped into my throat and my larynx, and you may hear hoarseness in my voice now. And is sore.
Okay. Let's get an answer. Okay. Go ahead, Doc.
So Ray, I think the most important thing is, and you have recognized that the condition that you have affects your entire aerodigestive tract. So you're swallowing, you're breathing, your voice. And so I think you're absolutely right. You want to find a laryngologist, a voice specialist, that, and in Great Barrington, I'm not quite sure. So perhaps a general ear, nose, and throat doctor might not feel comfortable. But more importantly is to connect with a rheumatologist that can really help you manage your chronic disease, because it really is a chronic medical illness above all.
I have a rheumatologist, and he, like most people, is draws a blank on Bichette's. My wife's a doc, and she says they don't, all they do is mention it in medical school. A person has to have knowledge through experience, and I can't find anyone.
Okay.
I've gone to
Ray,
ENT guy.
Yeah, Ray, let me just say that Albany, since I drive from Great Barrington to Albany every day, is really not that far away. So what would you say over here?
Here, I certainly know that in our group,
write the names down.
Well, a leading authority who was the former chairman at Tufts and also in New York, Dr. Stanley Shapshay, who actually lives in the Berkshires.
Can you spell his last name?
It's Shapshay. He is an international authority on voice disorders, and I am certain he would be happy to see you.
So there you go, Ray.
What about Bichette's?
Ray, I'm so sorry. We've come up against a hard stop.
I gotcha.
So I thank you for calling, and I think you're way ahead of the game now. Thanks again for doing it. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Right. Okay, we're going to get a very brief break, and we'll be right back. So your name is Peter, Carolyn, Jean, or Jake. Stay there.
Support comes from Premier Medical Group, gastroenterology, urology, internal medicine, endocrinology, geriatrics, nephrology, and pulmonology, with offices throughout the Hudson Valley, premiermedicalhv.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh, Masters in Online RN to BS in Nursing Degree Programs for adult students, Postmasters Nurse Practitioner Certificates in Adult and Family Health, msmc.edu, and Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, berkshire.coop.
We are back. Doctor, here comes something by over the internet. Hello, doctor. How would someone who lives alone know if he or she has an issue with sleep apnea?
Excellent, Alan. So I think what we want to do is sleep apnea can sneak up on us, but it may take the form of restlessness at sleep. If you wake up in the morning and you see your pillows and sheets tossed and turned in a big mess, maybe we're not getting into that restful part of rapid eye movement sleep where we're stationary. Or perhaps we wake up with chronic headaches and really feeling fatigued all the time. But nevertheless, the most important thing, if you think about it and suspect it, get a sleep study. And that's a diagnostic test. And that will really tell you if you're getting into those deep levels of sleep that we need to replenish ourselves.
Right. And of course, I have a little, but I only have it on my back. I never have it on my stomach where I sleep.
Absolutely. So it can be positional.
Can be. Okay. Thank you for that. Let's go to Peter in Poughkeepsie. Peter, go.
Hi, doctor. I had a nosebleed when I was like age 8 or 9 or 10. Very, very inconsequential, and that's it. Now, jump forward to 2014. I'm age 58. I'm in England on a 3-week family vacation, sitting in the back of an automobile, going to a bus station. All of a sudden, without any provocation, I get a nosebleed. Well, stop it up, it disappears or it subsided. Very easy. Come home. I resume my morning routine of doing push-ups. I'm doing my push-ups. What happens? Another nosebleed. Well, that doesn't deter me. It quickly subsided. Next morning, doesn't deter me. Morning routine, push-ups, another nosebleed. Again, subsides. Then 2 days later, I was sitting at a table in a chair reading the newspaper, and I sneezed. What happened? Fourth nosebleed. Hasn't happened any time after that, and I've resumed a lot of strength or intensive work, and hasn't occurred. I've been to my regular primary physician, and maybe as a consequence of the nosebleeds, but maybe the consequence of seeing a brand new physician who I hadn't been to previously, I had high blood pressure in his office that day.
Peter, let's get an answer.
Thanks.
Okay. So, Peter, excellent thoughts and question. The anatomy of the nose, the forward part of the nose, the lining is very delicate, and the little tiny vessels, the capillaries, are connected, interestingly enough, to your carotid artery. So a little innocent nosebleed can be incredibly dramatic, as you describe. High flow, bright red blood, spontaneous. But you raise an important point that blood pressure may have a lot to do with it. So there's different factors. One might be if you're sitting and really just minding your own business and it starts, maybe it's the ambient humidity. Maybe it was dry. Maybe you have an irritation of your nose. Maybe allergies, which I see quite often in young children, especially this time of year, versus when you described your provocating activities of doing push-ups, you know, you're raising your blood pressure. And again, that intimate connection to the carotid artery, you may disrupt those little fine vessels. So the most important thing is to try to narrow down, is it blood pressure? Is it a drying of the lining of the nose? Is there something anatomically wrong? And that's probably the most important for your physician to look at.
Thanks.
And Peter, why don't you keep taking your own blood pressure so that if it's really high, you'll know it and you can report it to your physician?
Sure.
They're easy, by the way. You can buy them at the drugstore.
Absolutely.
And just put them on your arm, and that's what happens. Okay, Peter, thanks a lot. Yep, bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Carolyn in Red Hook. Carolyn.
Yeah, hi. I've had problems with my sinuses over the last couple of years. Things seem to get blocked up, and I get a heavy discharge that ends up in my throat, and I have to clear it all the time. It seems a lot worse when I don't get enough sleep, and I do try to keep a humidifier going at different times to try to loosen things up. I had heard that a neti pot helps. Wondered if you had an opinion on that and anything else that might be useful.
First, tell us what a neti pot is, doctor.
Excellent thoughts, Carolyn. So the neti pot is kind of an older technique to irrigate or wash the sinuses. It kind of looks like a genie lantern.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting, Carolyn. I love this question because I think about in medicine how many things have changed, but some have stayed the same, and how we return to old techniques and ways.
Yep.
And so the sinuses, you know, probably around the 1980s, we got really sophisticated with sinus surgery and different ways to examine the sinuses and newfangled ways to treat the sinuses. But interestingly, when you look at our ENT literature and science, we're now returning to the basics of things like a neti pot, using saline, just salt water, to rinse the sinuses. So these hollow spaces in our face and our cheeks and our forehead, these sinuses get gunked up with bacteria and perhaps viruses and create the mucus that really just annoys us as humans. And so doing the neti pot is incredibly helpful. So I would be a big supporter and fan.
Okay. Do you think, I know dairy products increase mucus formation. Do you think by reducing that might help some?
Well, Carolyn, that's a little bit more complex. That's been debated, and it's not a clear-cut connection. But for some people, certain foods will provoke or cause increased mucus production. So if you find that's the case in your case, then definitely limit dairy products.
Okay. Are you familiar with any of the herbs that are used to help loosen phlegm and clear congestion?
You know, that I do not know. And part of the reason is I think many of us in Western medicine are really trying
not
to...
Not trained in it.
Well, not trained, but also trying to look for evidence-based products, so things that have been studied scientifically with definitive and predictable outcomes.
Maybe over in Europe with Commission E and stuff like that.
And you have to be careful, too. There are plenty of products that are touted as helping with mucus, like, for example, the zinc products, and not to name a name brand, but a lot of people will use zinc products to spray in their nose. Well, they actually have been found to actually damage the sense of smell permanently. So you have to be very, very careful with some of these products.
Carolyn, find people behind you. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate your help.
Yeah. Let's go to Jean in Del Mar. Jean in Del Mar, you're there. I hope.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have had for years a chronic cough where I cough when I cough, and sometimes I sneeze after it. Sometimes I can't even breathe, like I lose my breathing. I've been to 2 ear, nose, and throats. I've been to GI doctors. I've had a scope, and no one seems to be able to help this problem, and I just don't know if you have any other thoughts about it.
Jean, I love your question. Cough is so frustrating and complex. Cough comes and is generated from the, generally speaking, the voice box area, so from your larynx, and so many different factors can contribute, including things like GI problems, like you mentioned, reflux. There could be pathology or problems with the vocal cords themselves, or in the case in my business, I see children with cough that have foreign bodies, whether it's a peanut stuck in their lung or... You know, I saw a child that was chewing on the Christmas tree and had pine needles in their lung. So there's different factors, and you definitely want to go through a very systematic look at cough. The most frustrating for you, though, is that if it's a chronic condition and seems like it's not getting better, you do want to find somebody that's going to exhaust all the different possibilities and not be dismissive. And that's
Someone suggested a swallowing evaluation. Now, it doesn't always happen when I'm eating, so I'm not obese. You know, but it's scary when I feel like I can't breathe with this cough. It's happened a couple times.
So what your body is basically doing is, by coughing vigorously, is trying to expel something, and that something could be, for lack of a better term, food or liquid going down the wrong pipe. And so a swallowing study would show us that, and that would be incredibly helpful.
Thank you so much, Jean.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Rhonda in Shelburne, Vermont. Rhonda.
Hi there.
Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. My question is about surgery for my daughter. I went to our ENT, who did some imaging and said her adenoids are huge, and her tonsils and adenoids should come out, and the pediatrician agreed. And so my question is really about the different kinds of surgery that are done. There's, I read about this a little bit, and I know that there's, like, microdebrasion or suction electrocautery, and I just wanted to know, is one more safe than the other? Is recovery time different? Is there more bleeding with one or another? That's
an excellent question, Rhonda, and this is perfectly up my alley as a pediatric otolaryngologist. I sit on a committee for the American Society of Pediatric Otolaryngology, and we debate this vigorously every year at our annual meeting nationally. And part of the reason we debate this is there are many different ways to take out the tonsils and the adenoid. I will tell you that some of the techniques are really promoted by industry, meaning that there are certain devices that are touted to be safer, faster, less painful. Generally speaking, though, the cautery techniques, where you're kind of sealing up the blood vessels, are probably among the quickest, most efficient, and bloodless. Some of the newer techniques, including, I think you mentioned, microdebrider, shaving the tonsils, shrinking the tonsils and adenoid. It sounds great because the hope is that there's less pain, but that hasn't been proven in the literature. So.
And by the way, do they grow back?
Excellent question. So the tissues, the tonsils and adenoid, can't grow back, but if you leave tissue behind, so some of these newer techniques where you're shaving part of the tonsils, you will leave tissue behind. And so now your child might still be at risk for getting strep, or the tissue that remains may enlarge. So so I hope that helps.
Do they still give ice cream after the operation?
I insist on ice cream breakfast, lunch, and dinner for an entire week. And I usually get a big high five from my children after.
Thank you. My daughter will be very pleased.
Rhonda, thanks.
Well, good luck with
call.
Your surgery.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay.
You're welcome.
Let's go to David in New Paltz. David in New Paltz, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have incurred a significant hearing loss after undergoing 7 weeks of radiation treatment for head and neck cancer. My ears feel like they're very stuffed. I went to my ENT, and he says he, at this point, can't distinguish between water in my ears from the radiation and air in my ears. I've been taking Nasonex for about a month without any success. I wondered if you had any suggestions for me.
Well, David, thank you for your question, and I'm sorry to hear that. Radiation has a nasty effect occasionally where it creates a lot of swelling and inflammation. I think that's what your ENT doctor is kind of debating right now is this something that's quite fixable, meaning that if it's simply let's dry up the fluid, and perhaps that was the attempt at the nasal sprays, but if it's still kind of lasting as a loss, occasionally an ear, nose, and throat doctor might propose even something more significant like placing a temporary ear tube to reduce the pressure and fluid buildup. So that might be a next step. So I would advise returning to your ear, nose, and throat doctor and just letting them know that you haven't seen much improvement in this short time.
Is there an amount of time that I should take the Nasonex or not take it after a certain number of weeks?
That's an excellent question. Typically, we allow for about a month or so of use. The most important thing I will tell you with those nasal sprays is to aim the nozzle towards the sidewall of the nose. And that's just a simple anatomic consideration. That eustachian tube that connects your ear to your nose comes in from the side. So that's a very important technique thing that matters.
Now wait, the center side or the outside?
So the outside. So I always tell Alan, I tell my patients, aim the nozzle towards the outside corner of your eye.
Ah.
Okay, that's a very, very helpful suggestion. Can you tell me, is the tube that you're talking about, is that placed into the inner ear?
Excellent question.
Is it a surgical procedure?
It is. It's a tube that actually goes through the eardrum to equalize the pressure and either, in your case, reduce the fluid or the inflammation. Through the eardrum. But in an adult, it can be done very easily in an office setting with a bit of local anesthesia. So it should be a fairly straightforward procedure.
So are you saying there is an incision made in my eardrum?
Correct. A very small microscopic incision.
Oh, my.
David, gotta go. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right. Bye.
Let's go to Marie in Orange, Massachusetts. Marie, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had dental work done, a tooth removed, in March last year, and was treated with antibiotics for an infection. Then I had a bout of Bell's palsy in July that was successfully treated with no detriment. I'm totally recovered from that. But to this day, it feels like I still have an infection up in my jaw area where that tooth was removed. Are any of these three things connected, and is it possible that I still have some sort of infection floating around in there?
Well, Marie, that's an excellent, excellent point. You're hitting it on the head. Dental infections can be very, very insidious, which means they kind of sneak up on you, and they're annoying and pesky and stick around for a long, long time. So the most important thing would be to do some type of imaging to try to rule out that process isn't happening. So in most hands, a CAT scan. CAT scans are excellent ways to look at bone. And because of the relationship with the teeth and the facial bones and especially the sinus bones, that's what you'd probably want to achieve.
Okay.
Thank you, Marie. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to John in Hyde Park. John, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have two problems, and I'll let you answer the one that gives the more hopeful answer. I had Meniere's disease. It was caused by a heart medication, and it caused partial deafness in my right ear. And I'd like to know if there's a fix for that other than a hearing aid, or if it will get better. And the other is that I snore, but I don't have apnea. Are there any new techniques for stopping snoring?
All right, John, I'm going to touch on both because I think they're both excellent questions. Let's start with the easy one, snoring. I think the most important point is to rule out the apnea because that will strain the heart and the cardiovascular system. So at least gives you the ability to breathe easy. That the snoring is more just a disturbance in the turbulence of the airflow. So many people have done simple things like breathe right strips, which are those over-the-counter strips that kind of hold the nose open, to even the more simplistic surgeries to either strengthen the septum or to reduce the tissues inside the lining of the nose called turbinate tissue. So there are many different things that can be done very simply, not to mention, of course, some of the nasal sprays that we use for allergies. So that would be something that an ear, nose, and throat doctor could examine you and decide.
I did have a I did have a sleep study, and it's not apnea.
Okay. Well, that's definitely reassuring. The Meniere's question is a little bit more difficult. Meniere's disease, you know, even though we refer to people that have hearing loss and vertigo and fullness, we don't know what causes it. And so when doctors don't know the cause of something, it's a little bit more dismal in terms of prognosis and in terms of trying to counsel our patients. So many different things are proposed. The most important for you is to understand if it is an inner ear hearing loss, or what we call a sensory neural hearing loss, that's probably a permanent condition, unfortunately.
All right. Yeah, I think it is. The Meniere's, it doesn't bother me now that I take a diuretic. And so I don't have it anymore, but I do have the outcome of it.
Sure.
John, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We are going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from St. Mary's Healthcare, Amsterdam, New York, offering minimally invasive spine surgery. Choose stmarys.com. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, a New England craft program offering creative arts workshops taught by master craftspeople for adults and teens, beginners and up. Snowfarm.org. New York Oncology Hematology, sponsoring Spring to Life, a symposium on blood cancers for healthcare professionals, patients, survivors, and families. May 3rd at the Desmond Hotel, NewYorkOncology.com. And East Heaven Hot Tubs in Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs. Massage for couples and individuals. EastHeaven.com for information.
And we are back on the Vox Pop, and we have a couple of really fast ones. Lightning round, by the way.
This Fire away.
Here we go. What is the connection between nighttime nasal congestion and morning headaches? Sometimes the headaches go away when I get up. Sometimes they do not. Thank you from Katie.
Well, that's an excellent question. Sometimes we're not getting proper airflow, and that alone can disrupt our REM sleep. So we're not getting that really replenishing sleep that we all need for our brains to rest. And so ultimately we wake up with a headache.
That's great, Doc. From David, I have incurred a significant hearing loss after 7 weeks of radiation for radiation TX for neck and head CA. My ENT can't distinguish between water from radiation and air in my ears. I've been taking Nasonex for about a month without success. Any suggestions?
So I think that was similar to the caller
right, who
called in.
Yeah. And very quickly, you want to just, you know, reprise?
Sure, absolutely. So I think, again, the most important is to distinguish if there is fluid, then the possibility of placing an ear tube within the office setting. And that would make it somewhat easy.
Okay, here comes too long. You have to, when you do these, the guys, you have to make them really short. Okay. Hello, Dr. and Alan. I've just recently recovered from sinus infection. I was treated with antibiotics, and my symptoms have resolved themselves. Only one big problem. I have can only have about one half of my taste and smell back. This started about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Nothing seems to change. This happened to me 10 years ago. It took 6 months for my taste to come back, but it finally did. I use alcohol every day, and my nose doctor had me use Flonase for 10 days. Can you think of anything else I can do?
Tincture of thyme. The nerve endings that are responsible for smell are also related to taste.
Tincture of thyme. I love it. Okay, on to Sherry in Egremont. Sherry, you're on.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. This is just a response to the person you had with Behçet's disease.
Yes.
I had a friend who suffered from it very badly, and there is a website for the Behçet's disease. I think it's Behçet's Society. So I hope that man is still listening.
Well, Sherry, thank you very much for that. Doctor,
that's
spell,
thank
spell
you.
For us Behçet's so that everybody
it's
can know.
Behçet's, I believe, Behçet's. And there's an accent mark on the Behçet.
Okay.
But I know there is a website for
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, that's great, Sherry. Appreciate your call. Very sensitive.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Bill in Springfield. Bill, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you, Alan.
Sure.
Hey, Doc, I have this, it's not a ringing, it's more like a high frequency, almost like a feedback sound constantly in my ears. And I have an appointment with an ENT, but it's 6 weeks away. From doing research, I've come to the conclusion that it's a form of tinnitus. I do work around heavy machinery all the time, and I was wondering if there's any cure for that, number one. Number two, if the over-the-counter medications that I see in the local drugstore will help that. What's your thoughts on that?
Bill, I appreciate your comment. So tinnitus, and you're exactly right, that refers to the sounds or the noise that you're suffering from inside your ears. The concerning thing is that it's persistent in your case. We all experience tinnitus from time to time. We've all been to concerts or perhaps a loud wedding, and we have some temporary ringing in the ears. But for your case, I'm concerned about noise-induced hearing loss. As you said, you're around noise in your workplace. And that, to me, tells me that there may be some underlying hearing loss as well. The bad news about tinnitus, it's a highly studied topic. We still don't have a cure. We don't have an answer.
Bill, thank you for the call. Sorry we don't have better news for you.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, bye.
Take care.
Let's go to Andrea in Poughkeepsie. Andrea. Hello.
This, I have a related question, but different. I took Zyban a couple of years ago to stop smoking, and after a couple months, I got a ringing in my ears that got progressively louder. I stopped taking the medication, and the ringing went away. Recently, I've tried taking a couple of amino acids for supplements, and they're benefiting me, but they cause ringing in my ears, but it's a lot milder than what happened with Zyban. So I'm wondering what's going on, and is it could it be harmful to continue taking them even with the ringing?
Excellent point, Andrea. So because we're not sure of what causes tinnitus, we believe it comes from the most innermost part of the ear called the cochlea and the little hair cells. And they are very fragile and very sensitive, not only to noise, but perhaps in your case, to supplements and perhaps even the medicines that you've been exposed to. So if you're seeing a correlation, I believe it. And what I would say is I might even back off of the amino acid supplements and see if it diminishes the tinnitus. The thing that you don't want to do, as our former caller had said, is it's to run into a situation where it becomes a more permanent issue where you can't reverse it. So I might back off of some of those supplements and see if you see a change.
Yeah, it goes away. So that's no problem.
Well, that's definitely reassuring, but I probably wouldn't continue to do it if it's creating it consistently.
Okay. Andrew, we got to go.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Cheryl in Troy. Cheryl.
Hi. I have a question about, I have what feels like the sensation that there's something in my right nostril behind the part that's to the front and kind of to the right of that. And when I went to my primary care doctor for my annual, I told her, and she gave me a prescription for fluticasone propionate, I guess it's pronounced.
Right.
But I'm kind of almost into, I'm into the third month, and I don't think it's helping. Is there something else I should be considering?
So, Cheryl, your description is excellent. It seems to be most consistent with the tissues that are designed to warm and humidify the air in our nose, and that's called the turbinate tissue. And it often gives you the illusion of like a growth
mm-hmm.
or a polyp, and it's off to the side, just as you describe, a rounded bump. And typically the fluticasone, which is a steroid, will hopefully shrink it. And if it hasn't, I would absolutely start with returning to your doctor and perhaps even looking at other possibilities, such as the most common being allergies, where the nose becomes inflamed from allergies. So
mm-hmm.
that would be a worthwhile visit to an ear, nose, and throat doctor to take a look at that.
Cheryl, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Trying to get everybody in. Thank you very much. Okay, so doctor, not related to her question, but it did get something in my ear here, and that was, do we see many cancers of the nose, inside the nose?
Excellent question, Alan. The cancers that we do see are usually from either some type of industrial exposure or such as like woodworking or cabinetry where we're exposed to some of those particulates and then that induces some changes. But it's a rare place to see,
yeah.
Thankfully.
Interesting. Okay, let's just read one real fast from Richard. About 15 months ago, I had surgery to address severe sleep apnea after years of inability to acclimate to the CPAP machine. I had my tonsils part of my soft palate, INC uvula, and lingual tonsils base of tongue removed and turbinates cleaned out. 2 days after the surgery, my tongue started bleeding. I had to go to the ER for emergency surgery to stop the bleeding. Months have gone by, and my sense of taste is not getting any better. I can't stand much of anything at this point. Can't taste much of anything at this point. The fact that my sense of taste was not discussed, is that typical? Is there anything I can do to improve my sense of taste? Should this have happened?
Well, that's a definite consideration that, you know, the taste changed right after the surgery. I would definitely visit with your ear, nose, and throat doctor and talk about it. It may be related to the nature of how drastic the surgery is, that there may be some stretching and pulling on those nerves to the tongue, which, again, back to the tincture of time, I think over time the nerve rootlets might heal, and hopefully you'd see a return of that in time.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Norm. Okay, Norm, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hey, Norm.
Yeah, my question is, I get constant sore throats. Now, I've been to an ENT, and of course he checked, and he said, you know, you don't have throat cancer or anything like that, and which was good news. And when he figured he couldn't find anything, he suggested that I go to someone for speech therapy. I did do that, and the person there, after sitting with them and talking and explaining everything and all that, he was pretty doubtful that he could do anything to help me with the sore throats. You know, he did say, well, you know, you can come if you want, and we'll try some things, but he didn't seem overly confident that he could really help me. The doctor, you mentioned another doctor earlier. I believe his name was Shanshay or something. You mentioned
that's right,
that
Dr.
he was
Shapshay. That's right.
Shapshay. And you mentioned he was a voice specialist. So I didn't know, would that be any different than just a regular ENT? And is that someone that maybe I should consider going to see that might be able to help out with these constant sore throats that I have?
Norm, that's a great point. Al and I were talking before the show about how we all have in medicine really achieved subspecialization. And so here I am, an ear, nose, and throat doctor, but I specialize in kids. And like I said earlier, my colleague, Dr. Shapshay, specializes in throat or voice disorders. So my recommendation is absolutely find that person who's the expert, especially if you're striking out in the general sense. So that would be my vote. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good.
Thanks, Norm. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Pat in Saratoga Springs. Pat, you're on.
Hi, I'm calling about my husband. He's 60 years old. He has his tonsils and his adenoids. He's never really had any serious problems with them until the last year or so. He seems to have these little pockets in the tonsil area. And first he thought he had tonsillitis or something. He had me look down and there were these big white spots. We went to the doctors and the doctor said it's food particles and stuff that are getting caught in there. And he dug it all out, and he said, you're fine, but this keeps happening. And I'm wondering why and what to do about it.
Pat, great question. So those little pockets are called crypts. That sounds kind of creepy, but these little channels or pockets are in the tonsil, and there are irregularities. The tonsil is actually made out of skin tissue, so it's not actually food that's being deposited. It's cells that are being shed, and you get these little white, and they're called tonsil stones, or the official is tonsillolith. Lith being stone. And these things will reaccumulate over and over again. They're irritating, they're annoying, and there's no simple fix. People have tried mouth rinses, but it's hard to really actively get them out. There was a time where the water pick device used to kind of clean your teeth, that was often used to jet high
pressure.
Yep,
we got one of those.
But ultimately, if it's a bothersome enough issue, removing the tonsils will fix it.
Well, what about removing tonsils in a 60-year-old man?
Well, it's probably one of the most common things that I do in pediatric ENT. For me, it's about a 10-minute procedure, and it should be relatively the same for an adult. I think the biggest issue with adults versus children is the recovery. The kids are excited to eat ice cream for a week. Adults in their 60s will spend 2 or 3 weeks, you know, really quite in pain from the sore throat. So
okay.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Yep. Okay, let's go to another Pat, and this time in Fonda. Pat in Fonda, you're on.
Yes, about 25 years ago, I was diagnosed as missing one of those small bones that conduct the sound, and it was replaced with a plastipor. But ever since then, I've been wondering if that was just plastic, or if there is any metal in there at all So I've always been hesitant to ever have an MRI, for example.
So Pat, that's a great, important question that you always want to be very explicit when you talk to whether you're going for imaging like an MRI or some type of magnetic field. And plastipor typically is a combination, and it's a plastic material that's also linked with typically hydroxyapatite, which is basically fancy for calcium. So it kind of mimics a little hearing bone, and they typically don't have metal within it. So I would say that you probably are safe to have an MRI if that's the type of prosthesis. And actually, in 25 years ago, that was the state of understanding or the
okay,
different...
Okay, yeah, because this was done in Toronto in Canada. But
excellent. But in today's world, just to caution our listeners, many of the implants are now titanium, which you also can use within that magnetic field. So things have changed, but I think it's important to be very explicit when you're having these things done, like an
MRI. Okay, but you wouldn't, because it actually didn't work. I think I moved the wrong way too soon after having it, and I think it slipped out of place again.
Okay.
So I am maybe thinking of looking into it, but also, of course, in these days with MRIs are so common.
Absolutely.
I've always been rather hesitant, but don't think it's likely to be any problem.
I don't think so.
Pat, got to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Ellen in Gilderland. Ellen in Gilderland, you're on. And by the way, folks, I apologize for moving everybody along, but yeah, I have to tell you, I have never seen so many phones ringing constantly from the very first moment. So I want to give everybody a chance. Go ahead, Ellen.
Okay, I'll be as quick as possible.
Sure.
I love you, Alan.
Thank you.
All right, now let me just tell you this. I'm not even sure there's anything that needs to be done, but when I was 8 years old, I had scarlet fever. After that, I couldn't hear out of my left ear. And for years, nobody paid attention to it, and I got away with school testing or whatever. And then finally, you know, I was taken to a doctor, and he said I had 90% hearing loss in my left ear. I think he said, you know, I'm 63 now, and I think I said something about it was nerve damage. Now, I function fine. I hear well, except I cannot hear if there's anybody on my left side, and I certainly could never use a phone on my left side. Is there any advancement in that, or should I check that out or forget about it? Because I've lived with it my whole life.
Ellen, great, great question. The topic that we refer to this as is single-sided hearing loss. So you will get away with relying on just one ear, but you will be at you'll have a problem in a crowded setting, so localizing sound. So perhaps you're at a cocktail party or a social function. It becomes a little bit frustrating to focus on conversation. So for many people, using a hearing aid in this setting is a little bit frustrating because you really can't amplify or make the sounds louder in that ear that's impaired. There is a surgery that we do, what's called a bone-anchored hearing aid, where we actually put for lack of a better term, a screw through the skull, and the hearing aid clips and sends the signal through vibration to your good ear. So you actually perceive it on your bad side, in your case, the left side.
Oh.
And it's amazing because it gives you sound localization. So it's,
I was told way back that a hearing aid wouldn't help this.
Correct. So a conventional hearing aid would.
And also what that other man had said, I had an accident a few years ago, and I do have a metal plate on my right cheekbone.
So that wouldn't impair the ability to do this surgery, but it would be a potential option for
you. Well, Ellen, that's good news, isn't it?
Well, I don't want to screw in my head.
Well, okay.
I mean, unless the other ear starts going bad or whatever.
Okay, Ellen, thank you for the
call. Thanks for your question.
Appreciate
thank you
it.
So okay. much.
And let's go to Ruth, you have 1.5 minutes. What do you got?
Hi, I have a kid who's 6, and another one's almost 2, and for the past, I'm going to say at least a month, they've had what I would diagnose as sinus infection. Our whole family just had like this dry, hard to blow out, congested sinus thing, and when it does come out, it's really gross. Slowly, we're getting better through like rest, fluids and all that stuff.
Okay, but Ellen, Ruth, I'm so sorry. You've got to ask the question because we're out of time.
The question is just, is it at this point, would you say, oh man, you have to go to a doctor and get an antibiotic or just like can you just wait it out and it'll go away slowly?
Ruth, I love your question because for me in pediatric ENT, this is a debated topic. In children that young, the sinuses are probably not well formed. So what we're really dealing with is more of a nose infection related to the adenoid. And the adenoid is this lumpy tissue that lives way in the back of the nose and accumulates mucus and all the stuff that you've described, the crusting. And so sometimes simple maneuvers like saline, just rinsing the nose, will really help.
Right.
And again, this will get better in a young child.
I apologize to both of you, but that is it.
Great.
Thanks again. Right. Okay, see, when he plays the music, it's really bad. We're just about out of time. Thank you for everybody, and thank you to Dr. Jason Mouzakis of Albany Medical Center for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And you're very welcome, and come back again. Monday, support for Medical Monday comes from natural medicine formula creams designed to heal muscles, joints, nerves, and skin conditions, including shingles and eczema. Topperson.com. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones. Our producers, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Well, thanks again. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/voxpop. On tomorrow's program, an open forum about something. Stay tuned now for a news update.